This is going to happen really quick. We have gathered the best Simon Says players in the history of the great state of Wisconsin. If you look closely, you can see we have two groups here tonight. Here's how this works. We're going to eliminate all those guys down to one. We'll eliminate the ladies down to one. Last two people meet center court. Gentlemen, here we go. Hands up. Hands up, Simon Says. Hands up, Simon Says. Wave it around. Simon Says, stop. Hands down. You're out. Go. Yeah, don't look at me. Just go. Simon Says, hands down. Let's go faster. Hands up. Hands up. You're out. Go. Simon Says, hands on head. Simon Says, tap the head. Simon Says, stop. Hands up. Hands up. You're out. Yeah. Simon Says, hands down. Move down, please. Move down. You're out. You're out. You're out. You're out. Simon Says, move down. Simon Says, move down. You think I sleep at night? Yes, like a baby. Here we go. Simon Says, put up your right hand. That's the idea. Wave it around. Wave it around. You're out. Simon Says, wave it around. Simon Says, stop. Left hand up. Both hands up. You're out. You're out. You're out. You're out. Simon Says, hands down. Blonde. Blonde. Simon Says. Dirty blonde. Here we go. Simon Says, hands on head. Simon Says, run in place. Simon Says, run in place. Simon Says, stop. Hands up. Hands up. Hands up. Simon Says, we're not running anymore. You're out. Simon Says, hands down. Simon Says, face each other. Simon Says, give each other a big Milwaukee hug. Simon Says, separate. Face me, please. Face me. Face me. Face me. Face me. Nice. Simon Says, face me. Hands up. Hands up. Simon Says, hands up. Hands down. Hands down. And hands down. Hands down. Simon Says, hands down. Hands on head. You're out. Here we go. Simon Says, what's your name? Nick. Nick, stay here. Here we go, ladies. Here we go. Here we go, ladies. Here we go. Ladies, hands up. Really? Just go. And don't cheat. Go with her. You're the worst player I've ever seen. Here we go. Simon Says, hands on head. Simon Says, run. Simon Says, stop. Hands up. If you put your hands up, go, 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 go. That's it. Simon Says, hands down. Everyone come a little bit closer, please, and keep walking that way. Yeah. Here we go. Move down, please. Move down. You're out. Simon Says, move down. Simon Says, move down. That's the idea. Simon Says, stop. Hands up. Hands up. Simon Says, hands on head. Simon Says, hands on hips. Simon Says, one hand up. Both hands up. Both hands up. Both hands up. Both hands up. Simon Says, both hands up. Wave it around. If you're waving, you're out. Go. Simon Says, wave it around. Simon Says, stop. Hands down. Hands down. And go, go, go. Yeah. Simon Says, move down. Simon Says, move down. Simon Says, move down. Simon Says, stop. Simon Says, hands down. Let's go faster. Hands up. Hands up. Simon Says, hands on head. Simon Says, hands on hips. Simon Says, head. Simon Says, hips. Simon Says, head. Simon Says, hips. Simon Says, lady, pay attention. Simon Says, up. Hands down. Hands, you're out. Here we go. Simon Says, hands down. Simon Says, face each other. Simon Says, shake hands. Simon Says, wish each other good luck. Simon Says, hands down. Face me, please. Face me. You're out. Oh, here we go. Look at you. Simon Says, there's only one way to settle this in Milwaukee. Simon Says, dance off. What? What? Come on, Simon. What the? I think we know who won tonight.
All right. So, begs the question, how do you think you would do in a Simon Says competition? Yeah. Oh, man. We are going to be talking today a little bit about following the rules. Following the rules. And we're going to see whose instructions it was that Jesus was actually here to follow. But before we get into our new verses, let's look at where we've been so far. So far, we have seen that John is trying to establish for us that Jesus is God. He does that from the first chapter, where he dedicates almost the entire first chapter. I'm trying to talk as fast as the guy in the video. I got to slow down. Where he is establishing that Jesus is God from the first chapter. He spends the whole first chapter talking about the fact that Jesus is God. But then also, we saw that in the last chapter, he's going to point back and establish that. And that's where he tells us that the whole point of the book of John is to establish for us as readers that Jesus is God. We saw that Jesus gave signs of this throughout his ministry, as he performed miracles, as he did different things that the Old Testament prophets said he was going to do, as he proved his deity. We saw that when he came to change everything, not to just give you a new piece of information, not just to add to all the teachings of the prophets who had come before, not just to explain things in a new way, but to actually change the world. That when he came to give new life. He talks to Nicodemus about the fact that we need to be born again, that basically we need to start over from scratch and live a new, entirely different life. Which then begged the question, who is Jesus to you? John is establishing the fact that Jesus is God. That is the truth of who Jesus is. But how we see Jesus, how we perceive Jesus, and whether or not we accept him as the God of the universe who created everything, the God of the universe who is all-powerful, who came to earth to die, to change everything, or whether we just see him as a pretty good guy who taught some pretty good stuff, based on how we see him will entirely change what we do with his teaching and how we respond to that teaching. Which also asks the question then, what is it that you are looking for from him? And how you perceive him, how you see Jesus, whether you see him as God or not, is going to change how, what you ask of him, what you are going to him to seek, and how you're going to respond to his answer in your life. Because sometimes Jesus is going to ask us to do things that are uncomfortable. We saw that last week as he taught people about the fact that they were going to have to accept him fully, and that made them uncomfortable. Uncomfortable to the point that many of them left. In fact, the end of that passage makes it almost seem like everyone except for his 12 left because they did not like what he was teaching. And we have to ask ourselves, if Jesus asks us to do something that is uncomfortable, are we willing to step into that? Are we willing to accept that and do what he is calling us to do? Or are we more like those who walk away, who say, that's too much. I was here as long as you were feeding me. I was here as long as I could get food and water and bread and fish. But no, anything beyond that, I think I'll just go take care of it myself. So it's into this that we now start our new chapter, John chapter 7. We're going to look at verses 1 through 24 today. It says, after this, after all those folks walked away, after he's left with the disciples who said to him, where are we going to go? We know that you are the Messiah. We know that you are God. We are here. We're signing up for this. After this, Jesus goes about in Galilee. That's that northern territory. We saw the map a few weeks ago. He's spending that time up around the Sea of Galilee and in the area around where he had been doing his ministry up until this point. And he would not go about in Judea, that's the southern part, down by the Dead Sea on the map of Israel, because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Anybody remember? We covered this 2 weeks ago. Let's see if your memories are great. Why are the Jews seeking to kill Jesus? Yes. So, yeah, he healed somebody on the Sabbath. Said that's why they seek to persecute him. Then later in the chapter, though, it said, and he did something else that then drove them to want him dead. They were persecuting him because he was healing on the Sabbath, but he did something else that caused them to want him dead. Anybody remember what that was? Okay. Sorry? He liked the dolphins. Exactly. Exactly. Jesus and I had the same taste. That's all I heard there. Jesus. He claimed he was God. Exactly. Because oftentimes you will hear teaching that says that Jesus never claimed to be God. Clearly anybody who wants to make that claim has not read the Gospels because he does it all the time. And John, in particular, keeps reminding us that he's doing it because he keeps pointing out to us that because he was claiming to be God, because he said, I'm God, we're the same thing, the Jews wanted him dead. So we might miss it today. They didn't miss it then. Now the Jews, Feast of Booths was at hand. So his brother said to him, leave here and go to Judea that your disciples also may see the works that you are doing. For no one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. For not even his brothers believed in him. So the time has come, and the calendar year for Jesus that the Jews are celebrating the Feast of Booths. And if anybody was here last year, you might remember we celebrated this together. It's also known as the Feast of Tabernacles. This is a feast where the Jews wanted to remember what it was like to wander in the desert for 40 years. So for 7 days, the Jews leave their homes and they set up tents or booths or tabernacles, all the same word here, in their front or backyard. Some of them at this time would have actually set them up on the roof of their homes. And they live in these temporary dwellings for a week to remember what it was like to live in the wilderness. We did the same thing. We did it in Scott's backyard. We set up tents. We slept there for an entire week. And we were really lucky because that was the first week of October. We were expecting to be cold. It was the exact opposite. We ended up like smoking ourselves out. It was so hot that week. It was crazy. This is what they're about to go do. So Jesus is home with his brothers. These would be his half-brothers, other children that Mary and Joseph had after Jesus. And they're there to celebrate the Feast of Booths. This is not one of the pilgrimage feasts, which is why he's doing it in Galilee, in his hometown, not in Judea or Jerusalem. But his brothers are going to the big party. They want him to head down to Judea, to Jerusalem, in that area. And he says, so leave here and go there. Go to where all the big party is. Go to where all the people are, so that your disciples, those who are following you, might see what you've been doing. He says, sir, no one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly. What they're saying is, look, you've been doing these for these really tiny crowds, you know, 5,000 people, just really tiny crowds. No one knows what you've been doing. You should get out there, and you should let more people see the things you've been doing. You can get a better following. More people will be excited. More people will follow you if you do it in a bigger crowd. It says, for if you do these things in secret, show yourself to the world. But we can see here, because John points it out, they're not doing this to try to help Jesus. They're trying to do this because they don't believe in him. They are trying to out him. They're trying to get him to go to town to do these things so people can see that he's not real. They think if he goes and does it in a bigger crowd, someone will figure out what he's doing, and he'll be exposed because his brothers did not believe in him. So Jesus says to them, my time has not yet come, but your time is always here. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about it that its works are evil. You go up to the feast. I am not going up to this feast, for my time has not yet fully come. After saying this, he remained in Galilee. All right, we're going to work here from the outside in. Because he says this phrase here again that we've seen once before in chapter 2, this idea that my time has not yet come. If you remember back in chapter 2, he says this when Mary, his mother, comes to him at the wedding feast and tells him that they have run out of wine, that he needs to do something to provide wine for this marriage ceremony. And he says to her, woman, my time has not yet come. And then he goes ahead and does the miracle anyway, which is an interesting pattern that we're going to see here, because now he says, my time has not yet come. And what he's saying to his brothers is, I'm not going up to the festival because my time has not yet come. Spoiler alert, when we go to the very next slide, he's going up to the festival. So this is the second time that Jesus has said, my time, I'm not going to do the thing because my time has not yet come. And then he does exactly what he says he's not going to do. This is a pattern. This is something that's happening more than once. But this time, Jesus shares a little bit more, or John in his writing shares a little bit more. Because he says that what Jesus said next was, my time has not yet fully come. That's a little more than he gave us last time. Because last time he just told his mother, no, my time has not yet come. Now he's saying my time has not yet fully come. This sheds some light on what his time is that he's talking about. What he's specifically talking about is my time, the time to do the thing that I have come to do, is not here. Last time, it was because he had not started his earthly ministry yet. Once he then turned the water into wine, that marked the start of his earthly ministry, such that people were going to see him, people were going to follow him, and he starts his ministry. Now his time has started to come. He, at that moment, was set on a trajectory that there was no moving off of. The instant he turned the water into wine, he was headed to the cross. He knew what was coming. And now, the Jews are seeking to kill him. He is many months closer to his actual time, and now he's saying, my time has not fully come, which is why I'm not going to go up to Judea. Because if I go up there, it's going to accelerate this process. It's going to move us further down the road. So I'm not going to go. But then I love this little interaction with his brothers in the middle, because it kind of looks like how brothers communicate with each other. Because they're saying to him, you should go up there so they can see you, so that they will stop believing in you. And what he's saying is, look, if I can't go up there. Because I keep telling these people that what they're doing is evil. He says, I testify about the world that its works are evil. And because of that, they hate me. And if I go up there, they're trying to kill me. I can't go up. He says, but you guys, the world can't hate you. Your time's here all the time. The world can't hate you. Inference, because you're the same. Because you're just like the world. They can't hate you, because to hate you is to hate themselves, because you are the world. You are the ones that I am telling that your works are evil. You and them are the same. And he's basically saying, look, you go. Enjoy your time with your friends whose works are evil. I'm not going, because if I go, they hate me, you hate me, it's not going to end well. So after saying this, he remains in Galilee. But after his brothers had gone up to the feast, after they leave, then he also went up, not publicly, but in private. So I'm not going to go up. And as soon as they leave, he goes up. Not publicly, but in private. The Jews were looking for him at the feast, saying, where is he? And there was much muttering about him amongst the people. Well, some said he is a good man. Others said, no, he's leading people astray. Yet for fear of the Jews, no one spoke openly about him. So I love this picture. Jesus goes up, not publicly, but in private. This is the idea of the Prince and the Pauper, or if you've seen Disney's Aladdin, where Princess Jasmine gets all dressed like a common person, slips out of the castle, and starts walking through town, and seeing what people in the village actually live like, seeing what people actually think about their king, their queen, their prince, their princess, as they travel, not publicly, but in private. And as he's walking around, what he's hearing is that all the people are wondering, where's Jesus? Where is Jesus? We fully expected him to be here at the feast. And there's much muttering about him. Some of them are saying, hey, we've spent some time with this Jesus. He's a pretty good man. We've seen him do pretty incredible things. We've seen him help this family out who ran out of wine at their wedding feast, and he provided wine for them. And we saw when there were like 5,000 people and they didn't have enough food, and he provided food for them, and that was really cool to see. And there's this Samaritan woman that nobody should have been talking to, and he just sat and talked to her and like actually spent time loving people who were outcasts. When we see him work, we're seeing that he's a pretty good man. He's a pretty good guy. And yet there's others here. Right? They're split on their opinion of him, because there are others who are saying, no, what are you talking about? This guy is leading people astray. Because like he took the ceremonial water that was supposed to be used for washing and turned it into wine so that people could feast and get drunk. That's not okay. And like he had people follow him into the wilderness where there was no food and had no plan for how he was going to provide for them. None. They had no food. They would have taken like 200 denarii to feed those people. And he actually went and talked to a Samaritan woman. How wrong is that? That we don't talk to Samaritans. That's not okay. And he is leading his disciples to do these things in such a way that they are violating the laws of Moses. He is leading them astray from what God has taught us to do. So their opinion is split on Jesus. He is a good man. He's not a good man. He's helping people. He's leading people astray. Yet for fear of the Jews, no one speaks openly about him. Because to speak openly about him could indicate that they knew where he was. And remember, the Jewish leaders already have a very clear intention for Jesus. They want to kill him. Which means if you know where he is, they'd very much like to talk to you. And maybe kill you too. So they're not talking. They're keeping that to themselves. They're like, look, I spent some time with Jesus. He's a pretty good guy. I spent some time with Jesus. He's not really a great guy. Either way, we're not talking about it here because if the Jews hear, we're going to get in trouble. And we don't want that kind of trouble. So about the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and he begins teaching. The Jews therefore marveled, saying, how is it that this man has learning when he has never studied? So in the middle of this festival, in the middle of this feast, Jesus gets up and starts teaching from Scripture. Now, to us, that probably doesn't seem that weird because we don't often think of this in the context that it would have been for them. Jesus is not a religious leader at this point. He is a rabbi in that he is teaching his own followers, but he's not someone who is known to be a Pharisee or a Sadducee or someone that they would have expected to be teaching in the temple. It would be the same as if somebody walked in right now, in the back door, walked down the aisle, and said, thank you, Pastor Kyle, I'll take it from here, and started preaching his own sermon right in the middle of our service. You would think that's kind of weird. You would think it probably even more weird if that person who was doing that was your auto mechanic, right? He isn't trained to be a pastor. He hasn't trained in Scripture, as far as you know. It would be out of place, right? That's not who you expect to step up on stage and start preaching on a Sunday morning. Jesus, in their minds, is the son of a carpenter. Not a Pharisee, not a Sadducee, not somebody who's had a whole bunch of training. And yet he stands up and he teaches in such a way that they're like, actually, this guy's got some good things to say. He clearly has learning. But where did he get it? Because he didn't go to our schools. They recognize that what he is saying is true. So Jesus answered them, my teaching is not mine, but it's his who sent me. If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I am speaking on my own authority. The one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory, but the one who seeks the glory of him who sent him is true, and in him there is no falsehood. So what Jesus is saying is, in this moment, as you hear my teaching, evaluate the teaching for itself, not based on the one who's delivering it. Because if that auto mechanic was to walk up in here and he was going to stand here and he preached a true gospel, we should go, that man knows where it's at. That's awesome. He's a great teacher. Let's take the gospel. If that same person, or if I get up here and I preach to you something other than the gospel, you should say, it doesn't matter how much learning it has. I don't care if he has a master's degree. That's not the gospel. Get him gone. It's not the person, it's the message. And what Jesus is saying is this teaching that they're hearing, that they're recognizing as learned, he says it's not his. It's the one who sent him. In his case, it's Simon's. Simon said, go. Jesus went. Simon is God the Father. He's saying, I am here representing God the Father, doing exactly what he said. And here's how you know that I'm preaching on his authority, not mine. He says, the one who preaches of his own authority seeks his own glory. He actually said this a couple weeks ago. This is the second time he's pointed this out. He says, if I was here on my own authority trying to do things my way, I would be doing it in such a way that you would really like me. He's like, I would be doing it in such a way that when you thought Jesus, you'd think, man, that's a pretty cool dude. He's like, but I just had all my followers leave. I told them something uncomfortable, they didn't like it, and they left. Why would I do that if my goal was to make myself better? He says, you can recognize that I am doing this on God's authority because I'm saying what he wants me to say, regardless of whether it makes me look good or not. My goal isn't to make myself look good. My goal is to make him look good. I'm seeking the glory of the one who sent me, the one whose message I'm delivering. That's who I'm trying to glorify. That's who I'm trying to point to, not me. And he says, because of that, you know that I'm telling you the truth. Because if I'm seeking my own glory, I'll say whatever you want to hear to become famous. That you can't trust. It says, has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keep the law. Again, Jesus just going right after here. Like, he is telling a group that is there to celebrate a Jewish feast, who love Moses, who follow Moses' law as best as they can. He's like, Moses gave you that law, right? Yeah, you don't keep it. You're terrible at it. You're evil. You're not doing it right. Why do you seek to kill me? What he's actually saying here is, look, none of you keep the law. You all deserve the punishment of the law. But why are you seeking to kill me? I do keep the law. That's his point. I'm actually getting this right. You're the ones getting it wrong. And he goes on to prove that to them. He says, look, the crowd answers him, you have a demon. Who is he? They don't really mean that he has a demon. That's a way of saying you're a crazy person. You're not in your right mind. He says, who is seeking to kill you? No one's seeking to kill you. But if you remember back just a couple of verses, they wouldn't even talk about him in public because they knew that there were people out to kill him. But now they're saying, no one's trying to kill you. What are you talking? You're out of your mind. Jesus answers them, I did one work. I did one thing, and you all marvel at it. Moses gave you circumcision. Not that it was from Moses, but from the fathers, because it was actually Abraham who established circumcision, not Moses, but it was the Mosaic law that then laid out more details. He says, and you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If on the Sabbath a man receives circumcision, so that the law of Moses may not be broken, are you angry with me because on the Sabbath I made a man's whole body well? Jesus is saying, look, I didn't do anything different from what you guys do all the time. Because see, under Mosaic circumcision law, a boy had to be circumcised on the eighth day. Which means if a boy was born 8 days before the Sabbath, he needed to be circumcised on the Sabbath. And the Jews and the Jewish leaders at this period of time had gone in and they had evaluated and they said, look, we have a law that says we need to keep the Sabbath holy and we cannot work. We have a law that says that we need to circumcise this boy on the eighth day. And in our evaluation of these two laws, what we have determined is the circumcision law is more important than the Sabbath law, which means we are going to make an exception for rabbis to work on the Sabbath because it is more important for these boys to be circumcised. So we are judging for ourselves that this law is more important than this law. What Jesus is saying is, look, I just did the same thing. I looked at your law about not working on the Sabbath. And then I looked at the law that said, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and that you should love your neighbor as yourself. And I determined that it was more important to love my neighbor and to follow that law of God than to follow this law about not working on the Sabbath. I did the same thing as you. He said, but with me, it's different because I'm the one who wrote it. I'm the one who truly understands what the original purpose was. He goes more into depth in this in the other Gospels where he talks about the fact that Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, that this rule was put in place to help mankind, and as soon as it becomes a hindrance, we can make some exceptions to that rule. He says it's not about the rule. He's like, you make this little exception for the Sabbath. How much more so I healed a lame man? How much more important is it that we do that we love one another, that we care for one another, that I did something incredible, incredibly loving for this man on the Sabbath? He said, that's way more important than the Sabbath. And yet you're coming after me to judge me. He says, don't judge by appearances. Judge with right judgment. He says, when you evaluate my actions, don't do it based on what the Pharisees are saying. He says, when you evaluate what I did, judge me based not on what the Sadducees say, not what the religious leaders say, but go to Scripture yourself and evaluate for yourself, is what I did in accordance with what God intended. Judge with a right judgment. Because what John's trying to point out, and what I think Jesus is trying to point out, is this. It's an invitation to come see the one who keeps the law. Maybe not in the Pharisaical, letter of the law, strict way that they were trained to look at it. But when he evaluates it based on Scripture, based on the intention of God, the intention of what he meant when he wrote it before time existed, he is the one who keeps the law perfectly, without flaw, because he is the Messiah. So what does this mean for us? What does this mean for you? I want you guys to ask yourself a question. And I mean this seriously. I want us all, each and every one of us, everybody raise your hand. Simon says raise your hand. If you have your hand up, all of us, hands up, you're an everyone. You count here. I want you all to do this, all right? I want you to ask yourself this question seriously. What rule makes you think you've got it? As you think about all the rules that you've been told in your life that you need to follow to be a Christian, what's the one that you're just nailing? Like, I am really good at following that one. All right, I'm going to give you like 10 seconds to think about it, because I want you to think about which rule it is that you are best at following and have it right here, right? 10 whole seconds. Second hand isn't working, so I'm going to have to look at this watch. There we go. All right, you got it? You got that one in your mind, the one that you are best at following. Now I want you to think about this one. What rule makes it clear that you don't? What rule is it? What rule is it that you know? If you don't know, ask your spouse. If your spouse doesn't know, ask your kid. They definitely know. What rule makes it very clear that you don't have it all together? That you are not perfect? Think about that one. Remember, if you're an everyone, if you're an anyone, you got to do, what rule makes it clear you don't have it all together? Because here's what I want you to do. I want you to write that one down. Not the first one, the second one. The one that makes it clear to you, you don't have it all together. I want you to write it down. You can do that on paper and stick it to your mirror in your bathroom. You can make it the wallpaper of your cell phone. But I want you to write it down, type it out, do something, put it somewhere where you are going to see it every single day this week. Not because I want you to think about how bad you are. That's not the point. We all know how bad you are. I mean, we all know how bad I am. But I want it to be a reminder to us that the only one who has ever been able to keep that rule is Jesus. The only one who has ever been perfect enough to get all the rules right, the way they were intended to be followed every single time, is Jesus. I can't do it. You can't do it. Jesus can, Jesus has, and Jesus always will. So our only hope in being presented before God as a rule follower is to stop trying to do it ourselves and start trusting Jesus to be the one to do it for us. So when you see that written down, when you see it on your phone, when you look at your phone 8,000 times a day like I do, when you see it on the mirror every morning before you go to work, when you see it on your textbook as you're studying for school, as you see that, I want you to do this. I want you to stop, and I want you to pray a 10-second prayer. Jesus, thank you for keeping the rules on my behalf. Help me to trust you to make me more like you. That's it. Jesus, thank you for keeping the rules on my behalf. Help me to trust you to make me more like you. Because we can't do it, but he already has. Let's pray. Father, I am so glad that with hundreds of rules that point out how bad I am. At the end of the day, you're not looking to me. You're looking to Jesus. You're looking to the one who kept the rules on my behalf, who invited me to be his follower, even though he knows how I break the rules over and over again. Father, I pray that you would just help us as we dedicate ourselves to following him, to following you. Even if the world looks at us and doesn't understand, even if they hate us because seeing us acknowledge our brokenness points out their own. Father, I pray at the end of the day they will see you and that they will be able to delight in you, to rejoice in you the way we rejoice in you, knowing that you are the one who makes us whole. You are the one who presents us to yourself as righteous, not us, because there's nothing we can do, but because of you who declared it so and is working to make it a reality. I thank you, and I pray in your son's name. Amen.